Hello, sexies. You are listening to the Sisters of Sexuality, Five Shades of Play. And I am Taylor Sprocks, your host and sex goddess for the evening. We are here for the purposes of educating, entertaining, and informing you in all areas of sexuality, sexual health, kink, relationships, and the business of sex. I am so excited, excuse me, to welcome my new guests, as I'm excited every week. But this guest, baby, this handsome man I'm about to bring on. But before I do, let me tell you a little bit about him. Courtney Bram is the passionate founder of Something Positive for Positive People, SPFPP.org, a groundbreaking nonprofit organization dedicated to supporting and empowering individuals navigating the herpes stigma. With a commitment to destigmatizing herpes and promoting open dialogue, Courtney hosts the SPFPP podcast, where he interviews people who bravely share their journeys of living with herpes. Beyond the podcast, Courtney is a staunch advocate for the integration of stigma-free communication interventions into sex education and STD prevention efforts. His advocacy extends to teaching and equipping individuals, healthcare providers, and sexual health organizations with the skills and knowledge to engage in empathetic, non-judgmental conversations about sexual health. Courtney's mission is to foster a world where discussions surrounding herpes are stigma-free and empowering, ultimately creating a more informed, compassionate, and supportive community. His work at SPFPP continues to inspire and uplift those affected by herpes stigma while driving positive change in sexual health education and awareness. Courtney, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me and for so beautifully reading that introduction, that bio. That's the first time I heard it back to me. That's a very newly revised bio.
Really?
Yes. You got the first one. You got the first version of it.
It's so difficult to be someone's first at this age, but thank you.
Oh, wow. I appreciate that.
It is. You know, I don't get too many firsts. I'm like, I'm your first? You.
It's a good thing.
So, listen, huh?
Mm-hmm. I was going to say my first introduction in 2024 with this new bio.
Yay. I'm so happy to be your first of something. The question is good. The question has got to be, how did this start? You know, why did the advocacy start? You know, was it why herpes? Why not gonorrhea? You know, why?
Yeah, so in 2013, I was diagnosed with genital herpes. I woke up, mm-hmm. I had cold, flu-like symptoms, body aches, fever, chills. And I was living with my grandmother at the time. I was just out of college. I had my first job. I was going to the restroom. And when I went to the restroom, I touched it before I noticed that it was there. But I had an abrasion on the side of my penis, on the shaft, that was roughly the size of a nickel that probably looked like the surface of the moon, I would say. I went immediately to urgent care, and when the guy looked at it, he said, all right, that's herpes. They gave me treatment for if I had been exposed to chlamydia or gonorrhea as well, and so treated me for that, gave me a pamphlet, sent me on my way. I got 6 pills. I was supposed to take 2 a day, 6 hours apart for 3 days. This was the valacyclovir, and after that 3 days, it was gone. So reaching out to my most recent partners and just asked if they had herpes, and everybody said no. So my initial reaction was, oh, thank God. Like, because I ain't want to be known as that person running
that
around
guy.
People with herpes, right? So once I found out nobody around me had it, or at least they told me they didn't, that gave me a big sense of relief. So the first, I'd say 3.5, 4 years, after my diagnosis, mm-hmm. I was kind of in and out of the relationships that people knew who knew I had it. Those relationships weren't working out. So it became time to start dating again. And what that began to look like was I was starting to experience, some okays, some rejections, but I ended up finding this dating site. And this dating site is for people who are living with herpes, but also other STIs as well. And so I get on there and all my dating problems went away. But I started to see, because I was also getting connected with community and different support groups and like social groups exclusively dedicated to people living with herpes. And when I got there, I saw that there were people who had suicide ideation. So people were talking about killing themselves, and I didn't think anything of it. Honestly, I thought to myself, ah, that's white people shit. That's what I like thought at the time. This was 7 years ago, 8 years ago. And as I began to get more involved with the community and just like making friends, there was one particular person who confided in me. And she was someone I had become friends with. She had a boyfriend, she lived with him. She got tested and just found out that she had herpes. She never had any symptoms or anything. She tells her boyfriend, "Hey, I got herpes. Don't, oh my God, you're gonna leave me." And he was like, "Baby, if you got it, we got it. We in this relationship, right?" So that response is your ideal response from a person, especially if you're in a relationship and find out, right? But for her, that wasn't enough. So she kept like she wanted to stay in touch with me to just learn what symptoms to look out for so she can be a proactive, good girlfriend and be able to support her boyfriend. But in the time that we communicated, we became a little close. Like we talked pretty often. And then at some point, she told me that she had thought about killing herself. And I was like, all right, well, what's up here? Because you have the ideal situation. So why are you having suicidal thoughts? And so that made me start to just be curious. So I started to just ask if anybody would be interested in having a conversation about their experience with the herpes diagnosis, just to kind of learn what people are going through. And so that became something that I would record the audio for, and I was just having it, and I used to just send it to people who expressed struggling with suicide ideation. That got very tedious. You miss an email, letter, or something, and then they don't get it. So I put it up on YouTube, but it's only audio, right? So I saw pretty quickly that it got 300 views, but I wondered how many people were really listening through the entirety of it. So I went on ahead and just signed up to make it into a podcast. It makes sense because people don't have to put their faces out there. They can make up a name. So the
That's right.
navigating the stigma component of it, which just meant keep people's identity safe, gave them the safety of being able to tell their stories and share their experiences without any, fear of retaliation or judgment from people. So that's how the podcast itself started. And this was in early 2017. So yeah, I'll pause there and let you ask whatever questions that you have.
Well, so how many people have you interviewed since 2017 or when you started even with the YouTube channel about?
So it wasn't even a YouTube channel. I just uploaded it to YouTube. I hadn't like I knew these people wouldn't want to show their faces, so I just didn't bother with that. But from then till now, we're at episode, there's episode numerically, we're at 326, 327. But there's some bonus episodes in there too. So I want to say that most of the episodes are interviews. I've done a couple of interviews with healthcare professionals, mental health providers, and I have some episodes where it's just me. But I want to say roughly 300 people have been interviewed on the
That's
podcast over the last
amazing.
7 years. Thank you.
That's absolutely amazing. Do you think that herpes has a bigger stigma than other STIs or not?
Only because it doesn't go away. And I think that it's the reason that it's so stigmatized in the way that it is because there's also like you don't really hear back from people about their experiences with herpes. So if we look at HIV, which is manageable, treatable, there's still a stigma associated with it. However, because this is something that people can get and then be taking the precautions to not pass it on to other people versus herpes being something that even if you get it, even if you take medication, even if you wear condoms, you can still pass herpes on even unknowingly and without any symptoms, right? So there's a difference there. And if you make fun of HIV or somebody with HIV, you got the whole LGBT community coming after you and you're likely to get canceled. But if you
Sure.
make fun of herpes, like people with herpes aren't going to say anything. Like that's part of why things are as challenging as they are to get any sort of movement with better testing, better treatment, any sort of vaccines, or even a cure, is because people are afraid of being found out. And so, in the fear of not being found out, people aren't getting involved with any sort of advocacy efforts that can make this go away in whatever form that looks like, whether that be just a better test. I really think that that's like the starting point here. If we get one consistent test that everyone is tested for as part of a standard STI panel, then everybody knows what their status is. And also by the same markers, because there's different kinds of tests that they produce false negatives, false positives. But if we just had one good test that everyone got every year until they knew, because it seems like getting herpes, if you are not in a committed, mutually agreed to monogamous relationship, it seems like if this is something that you at some point will come in contact with, it's just a matter of are you going to test positive for it? So if that's the starting point of any sort of change, if there is any starting point for any sort of change in stigma and people's psychological changes that happen when they get a diagnosis here, it's going to be that, like more people knowing what their status is and knowing by the same markers, because then you also have people who are going to be more aware of what the testing protocols are, and they'll know if and when they've been tested, and they'll be able to say, oh yeah, I got this test, so I know what my status is. But the issue is that a lot of people just don't know what their status is. So to answer your question, there's that and a bunch of other little things in between there that contribute to herpes being as stigmatized as it is, as opposed to anything else.
And do you thank you for that. And do you so starting with one type of test that everybody uses is because it sounds like so for example, I travel a lot and one airport's TSA instructions are different than another airport's TSA instructions. So I'm assuming the same with the testing. I mean, why is it that, I'm sorry. Do you also believe that even though the stigma exists, that people are not so readily telling others that they have it is because nobody's dying, so to speak. You know what I mean? Because it's like HIV is like people's lives are at stake, or syphilis or gonorrhea, where people can die and or become sterile. But they're like, if you got the herpes, do you think people don't take it seriously enough to really want to, tell people about it? Or
Yeah, so it really ain't nobody's business if you ain't having sex with them. If we're speaking from the perspective of sexual contact, right?
sure.
So they don't have to tell people, but you are absolutely right in that, when HIV was as prevalent as it was, and there wasn't any sort of PrEP or medication to treat that virus, people had to tell people. It was a thing where we were able to recruit allies for ourselves during those times. And people are not doing that with herpes because of there is no sense of urgency and there's more shame. I always say that the stigma of herpes isn't even about herpes, it's sex and what you did to get herpes that there might be shame. So when, kids who get cold sores grow up into adults and they have cold sores, that is treated by the same medication that herpes is treated with, right? We just call it two different things. And in my
But
invest,
they're both herpes.
Right, yeah.
Right, but we call it a cold sore because that just makes it sound less.
So I learned about that. So one of my earliest interviews was with someone who owns urgent care facilities, and I asked him, I was like, why don't we call cold sores herpes? And his simple answer was, we don't want to associate kids with an STI. It's as simple as that. So a kid having gotten, whatever, kissed on the mouth, and they have herpes, that kid grows into an adult that puts their mouth on other people's genitals, even if they're in a committed relationship with someone, put that on their
Sure.
genitals. And now
Right.
it's, whoa, you got herpes. I don't have herpes. I got cold sores. You have herpes. And there's even like that element of it that people really have to look out for. And the reality is, it's the same virus, it's the same treatment. It
Okay.
varies in location and maybe the activities that it took for it to present itself. But yeah, that's the big thing, is that we don't have to tell people. So why bother talking about it? And we
Yeah.
do live in a very avoidant day and time where people would rather just not deal with the emotions of their herpes diagnosis, which is inclusive to whatever feelings they have that are connected to the stigma as well.
So, which is crazy to me, but that's just me. Me who tells everything about everything. I'm like, did I? I teach a lot in the swinger community. And yes, everyone's using condoms 127% of the time, but then you have people, not suddenly in the last couple of years, 3 years or so, PrEP has made its way onto the scene and people are taking PrEP on a daily, on a regular basis. Some so that they don't have to use condoms, and some because of the sexual activity they're having, even if they're having it with condoms. And I'm like, but wouldn't it just be simpler to just take or use a condom? And they would rather have sex without the condom. So, I mean, PrEP doesn't, it's only for HIV, right? Are you familiar with Jason, oh, what's Jason's last name? He owns B Condoms. He's a brother.
I know the brand. Yeah, I know the brand.
So they just released something similar to PrEP, except it's for like gonorrhea and syphilis.
I
I
ain't gonna
think
lie, that scares me. I know what you're talking about, the prophylactic, where you take
that's
it.
what they got. Yeah, but it's
Yeah.
something you take all the time to help you prevent from getting.
I didn't know it was all the time. I thought it's like, okay, if you're gonna go on one of these swinger cruises, you go on the swingers cruise and then you come back and you pop that
How did
other
it get
cruise.
related to a swinger cruise?
Oh, I'm just using that as an example. Like, if you're going to some
Oh,
sort of a sex party or something, like if you know that you're gonna have higher
unprotected sex.
risk sex ac sexual activity with multiple people, different people, and you want to take that extra precaution, there are ways for you to get access to like medication. That will, I think it's preemptively, maybe you take it before you go, or you take it like right after you've had the encounter, and it just treats the it treats it in the event that you were exposed to it.
Okay, yeah,
It's almost like
mainly.
operating
I'm
under
trying to
the
get Jason back on the show to
umbrella.
find out how this works
Yeah.
all the way. But it's like it's going to be like in Walgreens and CVS and all these places is going to be available. But interestingly enough about this what the swinger cruise and people's misunderstanding or misconception perception about the swingers is that people are just having all of this sex with so many people, which is not always the case. Mostly it's couples. On swinger cruises, and most swinger events are couples only. And so, and you will find in the non in the swinger community, non-monogamous community, that people are tested more regularly than monogamous people who are single and monogamous people who are cheating, who never fucking get tested or use condoms. But swinger people get tested like all the time. And actually, some of the cruises now. I think I heard, I haven't been on in a while. I think some of the cruises now actually have testing on the ship, but you can get tested when you get on, but people still, even though tested, they still use condoms because they know that You could have been exposed the day before. You could have got tested 4 days before the cruise and been exposed the day before the cruise and present, 4 days into the cruise. So those are some of the cleanest people in the most
Clean.
highly
We can't say clean. Clean. That's one of those
clean,
stigmatizing words. Yeah,
clean,
just we
clean.
should just
These are
use
some of the
negative.
most highly tested people.
All right. That I like
Yeah,
that.
there's a swinger people are some of the most highly tested people because of the sex they're having with other people. And because as big as the community is, it's small. So as soon, and this is why there are very few single men and only a few single women, the stigma of, women being cleaner than men, clean, right? Women testing more than men. And men just not caring, which is another stigma. So single men get a bad name, but people are tested more regularly in the community and use more condoms in the community because, Lord forbid, if you give something to your partner or vice versa. So there's this whole, it sounds weird, but they're afraid, but not afraid. You know what I mean? They're like afraid to give something to their partner. So they're more uber careful with the sex that they have and they're less reckless, if that makes sense. And why can't we say clean?
So
Because,
the
oh,
thing,
because the STI is dirty.
yeah, so it's the
Ah,
clean, dirty
yes.
binary, right? So if
Yes.
someone says they're clean and me as someone with herpes has to tell you I have herpes, that
That
implies
makes
I'm
you dirty.
dirty, right? So yeah, we just say negative, right? Or
That's,
we'll just
thank
use
you.
neutral language. In
Thank
reference
you.
to the testing thing, right? So there is so much accountability within these kink non-monogamy swingers
Yeah.
communities as opposed to individuals who are just single, right?
Monogamous,
So,
yeah.
or yeah, we could say single and monogamous, whatever,
Yeah.
right? So there's not really much accountability there. So, I can do whatever I want to do and I don't really have to report to anybody. I'm out for me, right? And when we look at, because this is something that I presented at different conferences about the CDC, how one of their STD prevention categories is one, wear condoms, which not that implies that a penis is always present because there's no mention of dental dams, and it's like wear a condom to prevent STIs, right? But
Right.
the other thing is practicing mutual monogamy. A monogamous person can, over the same period of time, actually have more sexual partners than someone who is non-monogamous or
They're serial,
polyamorous.
serial monogamous.
Yeah. So we completely like dismiss any accountability or responsibility on the person who is practicing mutual monogamy, even if they're doing that with, over the course of a year, 365 people, like one a day, right?
Yep.
Whereas a non-monogamous person or a triad, right, or a polyamorous, community, they're only having sex with one another, and there's still that accountability that increases their likelihood of testing and taking preparations and communicating. Communicating is such a big deal when it comes to STI transmissions because a lot of people just don't know how to talk about their sexual health. And that's one of the things that I really spend a lot of time doing when I'm working with people who are living with herpes is someone's like, how do I disclose? How do I disclose is the biggest, it is the hands down number one question that I get from people. And I'm happy to give you like a little bit of an example for
Please.
your listeners if you'd like that, but I wanted to
Yes, I
just,
would, please. Because I
okay.
mean, I one of the questions, one of the number one questions I get is also as a someone who's an ethical non-monogamous community and people who are looking to open their relationships, it's either how do I say to my partner? It's kind of that same beginning of the sentence, is that your sentence ends differently. So you go.
Yeah, so essentially what I use is one of my board members, Dr. Eveline Molina Dacker. She has the STARS talk. And this STARS talk, like while people come to me and they're like, how do I just tell somebody I have herpes? I think what they expect is a perfect sentence for them to say it and then the other person to like say yes to moving forward sexually, but that's not what it is. That's one part of this conversation, but it's a much larger conversation to first even decide like, do you know if you want to sleep with this person, or are you more locked into, I really want this person to accept me for having herpes? So the acronym is STARS. The first S is for safety. The T is for turn-ons. The A is for avoids. The R is for relationship intention. And the second S is for STI status. So
Say
if you
again.
don't,
Say it again.
So
Say it
S,
again. Uh-huh.
S is for safety. The T is for turn-ons. The A is for avoids. The R is relationship intention. And then the second S is for STI status. And so what this looks like in practical use is, one, you would be able to communicate these things yourself. So what do you need to be safe, right? I use the examples of I need some emotional safety. I need physical safety in the event that I'm seeing someone who, let's use the black man example, right? So if I'm dating someone outside my race, are you familiar with social, dynamics where we can't look like we're engaging hostile in a hostile manner? You can't yell at me. You can't flick off police when we walking past them because you have this FTP mindset, right? So there are things to be aware of when we go into all black spaces. Like, are you aware? Are you comfortable with the looks that you might get, right? So that is part of safety. The T is for turn-ons. Like, what do I like? How do I like to be talked to? How do I like to be touched, right? So being able to say there are certain types of touch that I actually really enjoy in a sexual encounter, or even if it's not sexual, but the relationship. The A is avoids, and you can think of these as boundaries. So the avoids are, don't talk to me this way. Don't ever talk to me this way. Don't talk down to me. Don't ever
I'm
yell at
not
me.
your slut. Don't I am
don't
your goddess only, not your slut.
there you go. And that's, yeah, that's, a boundary that you can set. That's something to be avoided, right? Don't touch me here. These are things that are my absolute no's. And a lot of people don't know these things for themselves, partially because they've never been asked, but they've never really asked themselves either. And the R, I think that this is the most important one. It's relationship intention. So the relationship intention being, okay, I know that I'm seeking something short term, right? If I'm on a date and this person tells me, oh, I'm looking for long term, start a family, I know right then and there that that's a misfire in compatibility and connection. So why would we continue on to where I would even disclose my status to them? Unless, if you're down to just say, all right, well, this is what I want, so we can just have fun tonight, whatever, whatever. So relationship intentions also include, what are your family values and goals? Is that something that you're working towards? Are you just dating and having fun? You can communicate that. And here's where we see different compatibilities or incompatibilities with religion, where you want to live, maybe like politics. Those kinds of things all play a role in here to support whether or not this relationship is a match. So if you get those four things in order and you know that this person honors what you need to be safe, that you know your turn-ons and can communicate those to other people, as well as the avoids and the relationship intention aligns, then you can go into your STI status. So generally, I have to tell people pretty early because they ask, what do you do for work, right? So I have to tell them I run this nonprofit. So it's a different conversation for me. But the way that I teach this to people is to just talk about STI testing. Hey, sexual health is something important to me. I like to know where I stand before engaging with a new partner. So I was last tested 3 months ago. Typically, I wear condoms with any new partner until we negotiate otherwise. But what about you? And you can just make it about testing because you also want to see if they use words like clean or dirty, right? Can it
We
go with
clean over
your,
here in the swinger community.
yeah, that's what I mean. So, like, if I hear clean, for me as somebody who has to, I have to now challenge that, right? And say, I have herpes, that doesn't feel safe, right? So, if I have herpes and I hear, I'm like, all right, let's talk about STI testing. And you jump up and you go, oh, I'm clean, I'm clean, and kind of get defensive, that doesn't feel safe for a person who has herpes to
For
continue
sure.
the
Or
conversation.
anything. I mean, it doesn't feel safe for anything. I mean,
Oh,
so
but if it's two people who use clean language and they're like, oh, great, me too, let's do this, right? That is kind of what the thought process is. So looking at moving forward from there, it'll just be, all right, well, I ask people, if you were to tell me clean, I'd be like, what do you mean clean? I'm like, me too. Like, I
A
showered today.
shower. I showered
So
today.
I would say from there that I got my last test this many weeks, months ago. These things I was tested for, here's where I was tested. I got tested oral swabs because I perform oral sex. anal swabs if you're into any sort of rimming or if you
Sure.
receive anal sex, and then blood draw, urine, how, as much
Full
detail as
panel. I go to
right.
my doctor and say, I just want everything that I could be tested for under the STI label. Just give me everything. And when I was married, my husband and I, we had been married 12 years. He had been snipped, and we got into the lifestyle. And then I just started, and we weren't like active. I mean, we had so many boundaries when we first started. Like, we couldn't have sex with no one in the entire state of North Carolina. So literally, we only like played like once or twice a year. But still, I thought it would be, we should get tested. And but I've even, growing up in the 80s when AIDS came about, I was one of my first girlfriends to start like getting condoms and doling out condoms and looking to get tested. And they were like, why? I'm like, I don't know. I just think we should,
Yeah.
And so here I go to my regular doctor and be like, and I didn't want her, I started asking for tests, and but I didn't want her to think that I was cheating or that he was cheating. I was more concerned for her thinking that I was cheating or for infidelity than I was concerned about her knowing that we were in an open marriage. So I just eventually confessed to her. I'm like, we're in open marriage now, and I just want to make sure that, we're both, I mean, we use condoms 120%, 120% of the time, but still, we're not using dental dams. So, and I would just like, just give me the full panel, everything, And so she's like, oh, she was real cool. She's like, no problem. And every time I would come in, she's like, full panel. I'm like, yeah. And so she would just write down a note. I said, just write slut, why don't you? That's what you're thinking. Yeah, my patient, the slut, give her the full fucking panel. But I
That
would be
can
sitting there, and this was, so at the time, you had to like wait days to get your test back. It wasn't like now where you can go and you can get your HIV, everything it comes back like in minutes. You'd be like days waiting, and I would just be like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. No, the condom didn't break. Everything's okay. They said they would take, and I would be running scenarios too, but not had sex with one person the whole goddamn week. And I would still be like in such a panic behind it, So fortunately, wait, let me say it. We were clean, fortunately. And it's been, oh, good, but it's still, and as I, what's the word, moved through the community and discovered, that, a lot of swingers tend to only have sex with the same people all the time. And they're really poly and they don't know they're poly, every now and again, but they're like, oh, we've been friends for 15, they've been friends and fucking for 15 years. And they meet up, two or three, four, five, six times a year. They go to the kids' bat mitzvahs. They don't really fuck anybody else. Maybe. But I'm like, y'all know you're poly, right? They're like, oh God, no, we don't do that.
we keep that
I mean,
separate. Yeah,
no, we don't. Y'all know.
it sounds like a separate lifestyle. Like there's the family, the relationship, everybody sees
But
this,
they're
but
not.
to be poly means that everybody can see that too. But to be a swinger, it sounds like you get to put on your mask and you show up into these swinger spaces. Is that's
But they're
what it sounds
not.
like.
They're going to the kids' bat mitzvahs. They're barbecuing together. Their birthday, but they're doing everything together. They're like truly loving friends who fuck each other, but they don't think they're poly because they don't know anything about polyamory. It's something, and I've had to tell people that we were hanging out with, we're poly. They're like, oh God, no, we don't do that. I'm like,
Yeah.
if I was 2 hours from your house at 2 o'clock in the morning, driving my car by myself, and my car broke down, and I called you, would you come before I could? Oh my, we'd come get you right away. We love you. Yeah.
That sound like family. And I get like
That's
in
family. I mean,
poly
that's.
communities. Yeah, in those poly communities too, like it there is much more of like a family feel to it versus swingers. So to me, when I hear swinger, I'm imagining that based on the context you're giving me, is swingers just sex and it's sexual. But outside of that, it's like we engage like normal human beings. But then when they hear polyamory, they think, oh, that's weird or that's
They
odd.
freak, swingers freak out about polyamory the way monogamous freak people freak out about swinging.
Yep, that's a
Everybody's
perfect
like,
analogy.
oh my God, no. And I'm like, yes. They're like, we don't do that. I'm like, you do it. I've watched you do it for the last 10 years. You've been doing it all the time. You love them. They love you. So now, we have people in our community. I want to talk about our community. And right before we started the video, you talked about not talking to, a lot of podcasters in the Black community or the African American community. And have you found the stigma of herpes in the African American community to be a higher, more stigmatized than you do in other communities that you had an opportunity to present in?
I ask the question one more time. I
Have,
want to make sure to answer the
in
question
your
before it just.
professional opinion, in areas that you have presented, either live or on Zoom or in podcast, have you found that herpes is more stigmatized amongst African Americans than other races?
Okay, I have multiple answers to that. The
Okay.
short answer is yes. And no, yes, because I'm not really hearing from enough Black people to know. So on one hand, it can be that there's that shame of and the whole like what happens in this house stays in this house. So I'm not, why talk about it at all, right? So there's that component. And then there's the component of when I do find out that people have it, or if Black people reach out to me, the conversations are different. The conversations, like I see, when they tell me something, I'm like, yep, I know. With the shame of not wanting to tell somebody, or even just not telling even sexual partners, right? Just not knowing how to or not wanting to disclose altogether. So these are some common things, but it's from so few people that it's not really enough to make that like an actual factual statement.
Okay.
I conduct surveys and it's really hard to get Black people to participate. Like I know a lot of support groups out there where there are a lot of Black men in there, they just don't get involved. And it's more of like, I think I see more Black people try and act like it doesn't exist or make it irrelevant than I do white people. For instance, like if you go to social media and type in herpes, you'll see 30-ish white women who are out and proud about their herpes status. And then you'll see me, like I'm in there sprinkled in somewhere from time to time.
Sprinkle,
And
sprinkle.
right, there's a couple of other men who have been in some form of advocacy. Some have come and gone. Some, this is their social media influencer career. And then there's someone who has written a book as well, and he's advocating for a vaccine, and he's just not able to get signatures. But as far as like answering your questions about like within our community, as far as I know, at least publicly, if you ask anybody, I'm the only Black dude they know with herpes. Like even people who've probably gotten herpes from their Black man partner,
Juan, no.
he said he ain't got it. Deny, 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 right? So,
Like I didn't fuck her either. I just tripped and fell in her pussy. I
know Black
didn't
men,
fuck her.
hey,
She
Black
only
men don't cheat.
gave me head.
Hey, Black men don't cheat, you know that.
Men cheat, but not all men don't cheat. And I hate when people say all men cheat or all Black men don't cheat. I hate anything about all Black men, anything except the only thing I love about all Black men is that all Black men are the best men on the fucking planet. That's the only thing I can say about Black men. But that's just my humble opinion about Black men.
Well, hey, yeah, if people know, yeah, so like, and even to get Black men involved or connected to me, it's had to go through women. And I say women generally. So, like, the women, most of the people who I engage with are women. And so, whenever I need more men to participate in a thing like a survey, I remember there were like 3% of the people who took my recent survey that were men. And I made a post. I was like, "Hey, ladies, don't give your man no ass until he takes his survey." And like, it was funny because women were actually sending their boyfriends this survey, and the responses went up. I was able to get from 3%, and this was 1,100 people, up to 15% of participation from men. So, like, shout out to women for making their men take this survey. But it's like, why do we have to go to such extreme lengths in order to get that perspective and to get some sort of like voice.
I wouldn't get married to my husband until he got tested for everything. And I'm like, he's like, I've been using condoms since college. I'm like, I don't care. I've been using condoms. But I'm not saying I won't marry you, but we should just know our status, you know? And he waited till like 2 weeks before the wedding. I'm like, I will not, this wedding will be canceled. I'm fucking telling you, if you do not get tested, I am not playing with you. And we were totally monogamous. And he was just like, he was so afraid. I'm like, you said you've been using condoms. Why are you so afraid? But he did, and we did, and everybody was fine. But I'm like, it's just, and we
Can
weren't swinging.
I say something real quick?
Yes,
I got to
yes.
because of my work. You said we were fine. Like you'd have been fine if anybody tested positive. So we were negative.
Because at the time that we were getting married, especially like for HIV, people were living with it. And and everything else was curable, right?
Got
And
it. Okay.
I knew there were ways, you know, to prevent, you know, I guess I knew there were ways. I don't know what it was, but I was like, I'm going to marry you no matter what. But especially for the HIV status, we don't want to be trying to bring children into this world and passing that along without the proper protocols. So we just need to know. I mean, we met and got married 8 months to the day of meeting. So I was determined we were married 25 years when I met
Times is different. Times is so different. I'm just saying
you. Why do
that 8 months, y'all knew in 8 months.
you say
Oh.
that? Well, we were in our 30s, so we were grown ass people. I'm
Okay.
like,
All right. Okay. All
so
right.
it's not
That's
like we were 20 or 19, but it's like, are you in or you out? You do, you don't. This is what I want to do. We had the stars pretty much, right? And I know how to ask all the questions, you know, and then we were seeking alignment, you know, like, where do you want to live? I'm like, we
Ooh.
met in Boston. I was living back. I'm like, if you want to live here the rest of your life, I'm not the girl for you because I'm not raising children here.
Put that out there
So,
right
and
there.
he had never, and I had lived in LA. I had lived in Mexico. He was like, no, I'm gonna go with you. I'm like, all right, 5 year plan. Let's get the fuck up out of here. I think we got out of there in three, you know. But
That. That's beautiful.
I know I'm a girl who knows what she wants. So, but I've always never been, you know, I do a seminar called Use Your Words, like Empower Your Voice. You have to ask the questions and you have to ask the hard questions. And so that same way of living has also transferred, you know, when you're opening your relationship, you have to use your words because you have to give people an opportunity to grow, meaning to grow with whether it's their age, whether it's their status with the stigma. If you can't give people the space and the safe space to say, listen, this is what the fuck it is. I got herpes. I like men. I like women. I like men and women. You will never have a real authentic relationship. So if you've committed to this person, now you know, with somebody you just met and you're just hanging out by the bar, you may not want to, you know, although for some reason people hanging out by the bars love to confess shit to me also.
I know that. I know that feeling.
Do tell. They tell me anyway. I care. I want to know everything. So we have this stigma. You are, you know, you have on your cape, you know, you're here, you're helping people to figure out how to live with herpes, if you will, how to still go on and not be. I mean, I never heard that people were suicidal behind it, honestly. But what are the current medications? You know, I think I talked to you about Alexander Babushka. We talked about, you know, there's some natural things. She talked a little bit about it. I think I talked more about it because my background is in holistic aromatherapy. So I'm always on the outlook of how can you heal, help cure without taking a bunch of chemical shit. So what is the most common or most current ways to for if there are any ways to prevent passing it on or picking it up or putting it down or keeping it safe.
What's worked for me has been if I have an outbreak, take the medication. Just it's valacyclovir or acyclovir or famciclovir, whatever one ends with cyclovir. Talk to your
Okay.
doctor about the best option for you. Okay. What I found to be the most helpful in preventing outbreaks, when we talk about like holistic approaches, it's really taking care of yourself. Like people are so quick to, when they find out they have herpes, immediately get on daily antivirals, even at the expense
Oh.
of their health because of the side effects. Or even with taking the medication, like I just take the medication as needed because I know that that works for me. I had my outbreak,
Okay.
I took the meds, 6 pills over 3 days, outbreak gone. And I've only had a total of 3 outbreaks, which the outbreaks are essentially symptoms of something else happening with you, right? So that first outbreak I had was just the first one. The second one that I had, I got fired from a job. I was in a new city. I was alone. So that was a very scary time for me. And then
Sure.
the third time was over the course of a weekend, I had a lot of sugar. The drinks that I had 98% daily recommended value of sugar and added sugars. And I was drinking those along with alcohol over the course of this weekend. So that was
Okay.
my last outbreak. I went to the doctor within a year of that and learned that I was pre-diabetic, so not pre-diabetic, but like right there at that line. And from
Get off
there,
that sugar.
I learned, right? Like, so having herpes was telling me, hey, you really need to look at whatever is happening around this time, which for
Okay.
me was all of the sugar and drinking, right? So since then, not only it wasn't just the sugar necessarily, because what we know about diabetes is that, yes, high blood sugar, but what a lot of people don't know is that carbohydrates turn
Right.
into sugar.
Right.
And that sugar then, if not absorbed, goes into the bloodstream, right? So now we
Sure.
got high blood sugar. So I saw a nutritionist who essentially just told me how to eat. She was like, here's about the amount of grams of carbs that you want to consume. And I also work in the medical field, educating medical students
Okay.
on taking histories and being good communicators with patients, right? So in that work, I learned about like our insulin and how that works. So for me or the average person, your body can take in 60 grams of carbs per meal. So if I'm eating a burger, fries, and a shake, that's triple the amount of
Sure,
carbohydrates
sure.
in a meal. So like I'm eating that way, and then the rest of that is going into my blood. So I had to learn how to eat, how much to eat, and that was something that contributed. I exercised consistently. That's not been something difficult for me because I like to work out. And then
Okay.
the other thing that's been like the biggest thing, and I practice this and offer this service as well, is yoga. So I'm a 500-hour registered yoga teacher
Oh,
through
nice.
Yoga Alliance. And a lot of what my work is does center around a lot of what I learned throughout, not just my yoga practice, but also through going through yoga teacher training and the nonviolent communication skills, the active listening skills, the ability to just listen to people and hear not just what they're saying, but also what they're not saying has really supported me in being able to give them support and also being where I need to be, which is present with whoever it is and what's
Sure.
happening. So when you talk about people like sharing things with you, I sense that you have this like deep presence with yourself as well, which lets people open up to you and say
Yeah.
whatever it is that they're going to
They
say.
say some things that I'm like,
Yeah.
"Oh, okay."
So,
So, go ahead.
yeah, I offer that as a recommendation for people. Like, I ain't saying you gotta come practice yoga with me, even though my yoga practice is dedicated to people who are navigating herpes stigma, helping them with being with those emotions that are underlying stigma so that they can sort of release that and make stigma a little bit less relevant and see what's there aside from that and then act accordingly moving forward. So I when we talk about a holistic approach, it's really taking care of your body, taking care of your mental health, taking care of your
Sure.
emotional well-being. I don't take anything. Yes, there are recommendations that I can make according to what other people say works on the internet, but everybody's looking for like a cure or to have something to avoid it. And my solution is that we don't avoid it, but we go through the thing And we come to the other side and realize how irrelevant stigma is in comparison to the rest of our lives. So
For sure,
it's
for
not
sure.
the herpes, it's the feelings about the herpes.
Right. I do have some holistic things that Alexandra Habushka, who does Life with Herpes, I think is lifewithherpes.com, and we talked about the more holistic approach. But when you talked about nonviolent communication, have you read the book, The Cow in the Parking Lot?
I have not, no.
That's you. I think you might enjoy that if you went, if you're teaching on nonviolent communication. It's called The Cow in the Parking Lot. Really good for anger management. Other things, so things I don't know if you know, you probably know, but maybe you just didn't think about that. The relationship between L-arginine and L-lysine in the body.
I have comments.
Well,
So,
it go ahead. Tell me your
no.
comments because I go ahead. I'll tell you why I bring it up. Go ahead.
All right, so everybody is different. So I have
Right.
surveys. The most recent survey, we'll be presenting this at our upcoming conference, May 23rd, virtually, the Something Positive for Positive People conference. So we conducted a survey of 1,200-ish people.
Okay.
Responses are still coming in, and one of the questions is about, what some of your triggers are for outbreaks and what they are. And there are so many different responses to that, as
Sure.
well as talking to people and hearing like things like don't eat peanut butter. People are quick to say what not to do because peanut butter has arginine in it, right? That is something that like I eat peanut butter every day that doesn't contribute to my outbreaks, right? So yes, there are things that some people are better off avoiding, some things some people are better off with trying out, but everybody is different. And I don't think anybody should just create a Bible off of the different inner information that they get from different people on the internet and then live their life according to it. I think everybody needs to let themselves have their experiences with it and then respond to it because we can be so proactive that we create a whole new situation for ourselves. But that's really all I had to say about that because people
Okay, so
jump to don't do this, the
the
only do.
L-arginine, L-lysine component. No, the thing that we talked about was because everybody's different, right? You have, so many hundreds of foods that have L-arginine, and those same foods have L-lysine. So it's not about avoiding a food that has L-arginine. It's because everyone's body's different. The amount of L-arginine that you consume versus the amount of L-lysine in the body at the same time is what can or cannot trigger an outbreak. Meaning that if, I don't know,
If
beef,
there's an
if
amount, right?
let's just say it's a bean, right? Beans are high in L-arginine. So let's say beans have 200 grams of L-arginine and only, I'm making this up, and only 50 grams of L-lysine, right? So you have a bowl of beans. So now you have more arginine in your body than L-lysine. You eat it, doesn't bother you. Someone else eats it, it triggers them because that amount of arginine in their body is what triggers them. So to counteract that, taking this supplement of L-lysine so they can eat the damn beans to give themselves more L-lysine, the higher, what's the word I'm looking for? To give themselves more lysine in the body as opposed to the amount of L-arginine. To give yourself that balance. If you discover that every time I have beans with peanut butter and fucking two pieces of bread, I have a fucking breakout because I have more L-arginine in my system than L-lysine, as opposed to having something that eat what you like. But if I take some L-lysine as a supplement, now I have more L-lysine because L-arginine has been proven, that's the right word, that it does create outbreaks in some people. But I'm 100% with you that everybody's body is different. But if there's something you can do to counteract the amount of L-arginine, because it's not even, I've never heard like carbohydrates and sugar. But I have heard stress can cause an outbreak, and even high intensity workouts, which stresses the body, could cause an outbreak. Caffeine, I mean, Is there something that can't cause a fucking outbreak when it comes to herpes?
Yoga,
So, but that's the only thing that, yeah, the
the
right kind of
right kind of
yoga. But one of the things that I don't carry in my products, because my main company is Organic Loving, so everything we carry is organic, eco-friendly, is that some lubes have L-arginine in them. And putting it on your genitals could possibly create an outbreak because of the amount of L-arginine. So knowing that the skin is porous, we can absorb up to 60% of what we put on. Some things are absorbed, some things only penetrate,
I
right?
got a question about that. So,
Go ahead.
what we know about herpes is that it's a lot of people think it's a skin condition. It's actually a nerve condition. So the
That's it.
virus
It's
lives,
in the system.
it'll live in the nerve. So I'm wondering
Right.
if placing arginine on the body or arginine, however we say it, placing that on the body is different than consuming it, right? Like
So
that's my question.
depends on where you're putting it, because the genital area, especially for our, those of us who have vulvas, it's covered in a mucous membrane, just like your nose, your eye, and your anus. 100% of what you put on in it can be absorbed into the bloodstream. The skin on the penis is some of the thinnest skin next to the eyelids on the body. Yeah, eyelid skin really, really thin, and the skin on the penis is really thin. So the absorption into the bloodstream could be great. So it's not just the L-arginine by itself. What is this trifecta that what's the word I'm looking for? What is it, the L-arginine along with? Because you have certain ingredients like propylene glycol. There are certain ingredients that actually help break down the barrier of the skin so things can be absorbed. So when you look at certain makeup and certain things that help get rid of the wrinkles on the face, it has to kind of break through the barrier of the skin so that it can get penetrated, so that it can do what it's supposed to do. So when you look at a lubricant, or when you look at a topical for a man to help him get hard, they'll use L-arginine as a vasodilator, right? Opens up the blood vessels to get more blood in the area. Same thing for a clitoral stimulant, opens up the blood vessels. And I have literally called the companies and said, I would love to carry your product, but let me know when you take out the L-arginine, because for some people, it could trigger an outbreak. And they said, yes, I know. We put a disclaimer on the package. Ain't nobody reading the fucking disclaimer on the goddamn package. Nobody's reading the disclaimer. Like, we about to fuck. Give me the lube. Nobody's reading it. So I just
After you'd be
assumed,
like, what kind of lube was that?
well,
That's where we
kind of,
at.
right? And the same thing, like with glycerin and lubricants, that's also, every woman's not going to get a yeast infection from it, but some might be affected by it. So that's the thing with the L-arginine and the L-lysine. I know it makes a difference for some people. And instead of taking the medication, they can triple up, double up on their L-lysine to help kick back the possibility of an outbreak by doing that. From my own personal studies and talks with Alexandra, because she sells the L-lysine on her site. And she was like, it works, it helps keep people from having outbreaks or having fewer outbreaks. I had to go back and see what she said exactly, but yeah,
That's
that's
all
what she said.
right.
Well, there it is. So I just have a couple more questions, and then I'm going to let you go. This has been such an amazing conversation. Tell me, what does sex mean to you?
Oh man, so I used to think everybody you cussed a few times, so I used to think everybody I fucked liked me. So
What?
I genuinely believe that, and I had to learn the hard way over time. Just because somebody has sex with you don't mean they like you like that, right? So sex's meaning has evolved. Sex used to be a pursuit of intimacy or a pursuit of connectedness. That I think that that's what it used to be. And now what I see sex as now, I mean, it is that. It's not the pursuit of that for me. It's all right, we have this. This is one outlet of expression for that. Sex is more of a presence practice. It's the opportunity to disconnect from whatever the fuck is going on outside in the world, to just be able to be with and experience whatever it is, the pleasure, pleasurable moments with myself, or if that is with a partner. Like, that's what it's become. It's become a presence practice.
So two partners or three partners? I'm
Or
sorry, I
two,
mean
three, four
more
more. Yeah, right.
than two, some
In
threesomes,
therapy,
foursomes,
yeah,
moresomes.
in therapy, we had this conversation about what did he say? Like, wanting intimacy but settling for sex. That's been a thing that I've done. Like, I want to, be really connected. And then what I would do is, like, oh, damn, you're not available for intimacy. You're not available for, anything like that. All right, I'll take sex. And then those moments of sex, having the illusion of intimacy. So it's really transformed since being aware that sex was pursuing intimacy rather than having intimacy and then having sex as one form of expression through
I've
intimacy.
done the opposite.
What's the opposite? Because I keep saying, I think I'm flipping it around. I'll say it the right
I
way and flip.
really wanted the sex, but I'll settle for the fucking intimacy. Jeez. Oh yeah, fine, we can cuddle. Oh my God, get out of my house. I really wanted some sex and you just want to cuddle. So,
Excuse me.
and I'm not saying, goddess doesn't want intimacy and connection and all of that, but there's been times when just wanted some sex and you can go now. I'm sorry.
I got
Actually, I'm not sorry.
you. But yeah, that's what sex is for me.
Oh, good. Well, Courtney, it has been amazing having you on, and you are a wealth of information, and I am like so happy that you made the time with all of our time changes.
Oh no, no worries. I'm glad you reached out. I saw the email and I know the name. I was like, oh yeah. So it was a no-brainer for me. I didn't even read the whole email.
Thank you. Well, to stay up to date with Courtney, his website, of course, is www.spfpp.org. The same, you can find him on Facebook and YouTube under SPFPP, which is stands for. Wait, don't you tell me. I know what it stands for. Something positive for positive people. Find out your status. Reach out to Courtney. Get some information. Knowledge is power. His ID, of course, is his name, Courtney Brame. How are you pronouncing it right? Brame, right? Underscore. And I will, of course, also have all of these in the show notes. And to stay up to date with me, of course, if you have any questions for me or any of my guests, you can email me at sistersofsexuality@gmail.com. And our Instagram, Sisters of Sexuality, and on all social media. Please be sure to visit our sponsor, Organic Lovin', that's LOV.com. And I want to thank you so much for tuning in. And if this episode resonated with you, would you please consider subscribing as a way of supporting the growth of this podcast and our channel and allow us to keep informing, educating, and entertaining you. So until next time, stay sexy, get tested.